This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, morning show, Larry Richard with Michael Bartley this morning.
Good morning, all.
So many different news angles, and we've been covering what we now know will be a big change with the Department of Education, Social Security changes, and the list goes on.
The big international story, of course, is the Israeli Hamas ceasefire has collapsed. That's, you know, and this morning, our senior senator, Senator John Fetterman, says, quote unquote, Hamas does not want peace. He's demanding the hostages be released. And joining us now, the expert on the Middle East, University of Pittsburgh, Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Pittsburgh. We love talking to her, Dr. Jennifer Brick Murtazashvili. Dr. Murtazashvili, good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you make of the ceasefire collapsing? How big of a deal is this? And should the whole international community be concerned?
So, you know, unfortunately, this collapse is not entirely unexpected. What we saw with the release of those hostages, you know, over the course of several weeks was phase one of a negotiated ceasefire. And, you know, phase one, it was a hard thing to get to. You recall those hostages started coming out. The days before President Trump came to office, I think he put a lot of pressure on both Hamas and the Israeli government to come to an agreement. And we saw those hostages come flooding out along with a prisoner exchange. But we all knew that phase two would be much harder. And I think a lot of us didn't anticipate that it would fall apart. Number one, that was the Biden administration that really negotiated that first ceasefire. And number two, it was really unclear what would happen after phase one. The Israelis have said, you know, release half of the remaining hostages for an extension of the ceasefire, and Hamas said no. So here we are.
So what happens now?
So I think what happens now is we're going to see, unfortunately, the Israeli government is going to put an extraordinary amount of military pressure on Hamas. It seems to be, unfortunately, one of the only things that they really respond to. This will probably lead to new negotiations coming up. But I think without this resumption of hostilities, that Hamas will not be forced to the negotiating table.
Whatever
so
happened.
I'm hoping that this... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jennifer.
I'm just hoping that this period doesn't last too long, you know, both for the people of Gaza, for the hostages that remain, and, you know, also for the people of Israel, because last night Hamas began firing rockets back into Israel. We hadn't seen that in quite a while, and that is quite an escalation.
That said, whatever happened to the idea that President Trump floated about taking over Gaza?
I mean, so we were all really surprised to hear that. My interpretation of what that was really putting pressure on governments of the Middle East, countries in the region who really hadn't come to a kind of agreement about what they would do to rebuild Gaza. And, you know, your listeners may or may not be aware, but, you know, when there's wars, typically people from those countries are allowed to leave the country, escape the war zone. The people of Gaza have not been able to do that. So you remember the war in Ukraine began, and we began to see refugees flood out of Ukraine. Here, even to the United States, all over Europe, the situation with the Palestinians is such that, you know, neighboring Egypt will not let the Gazans out of the country, and they remain. And so one of the things that I think President Trump was trying to do was put pressure on Arab states to say, hey, let these Gazans out. They have been kept in this region in Gaza, as part of this historic Israel-Palestine conflict. And the idea is that they should remain there. They can't be displaced ever because of the historic nature of that conflict. So that was really pressure, I think, being put by President Trump on those other countries to say, hey, let these people out. Let's rebuild the region. I'm not entirely sure he meant that he wanted to take over Gaza as, you know, the 52nd state. But I think that was really an effort by him to get a concrete plan for reconstruction. And what happened in the days after that is that there was a plan put forward by the Egyptians, right? The neighboring Egyptian state, and a lot of Arab countries came together in Egypt to discuss a reconstruction plan. And so those plans remain ongoing. So what Trump did in those statements was really kickstart some of those discussions.
Does this mean that we're going to see an uptick again in protests on your campus and campuses around the country? I got to tell you that, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, and this is my own opinion, but, you know, this some of these initiatives trying to get the city of Pittsburgh to divest in Israel, and affecting robotics at Carnegie Mellon, all that type of stuff, really gets under my skin, and I think it's anti-Semitic. I do, but I'm not protests are fine on campus, but are we going to see this conflict heating up again?
Absolutely, and I would just agree with you. I think it's completely anti-Semitic to see this, and it's class book.
Did you say you agree with me or disagree with me?
Absolutely agree with you.
Thank you.
It's textbook anti-Semitism.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Yes, and I tell you, as someone who grew up a Tree of Life, it's really heartbreaking to see the hatred in our city right now, and especially among some of the young people on our campuses. And I tell you, as a Pitt professor, it's been really heartbreaking to watch this. Things I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. Seeing some of the things that our students have experienced. Has been really heartbreaking.
That are said about Jewish Americans.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, why is it anti-Semitic? Because you single out Israel. I've worked years in the Middle East, Central Asia, Afghanistan. There was a genocide. President Biden talked about the genocide of the Uyghurs in China. I haven't seen any protests against China on our campus for that. That's the classic double standard that is the definition of anti-Semitism.
I'm with you.
Professor, thank you, and we'll pray for better outcomes, but we're back to it again.
For all people.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
All people, right? I mean, Jewish, Muslim, regardless, there's a real opportunity. I just hope that we can get through this period, both in the Middle East and here domestically, into better days.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Doc. Thanks so much.